Meeting of November the 10th, 2020. The meeting conduct is in the front page of your agenda. Security procedures for those visitors. Evacuation details and information are located on the wall on the right-hand side. In the unlikelihood of an emergency, evacuation alarm will sound and evacuation wardens will assist with the evacuation. When directed, everyone will be required to exit in an orderly fashion through the front doors and go directly to the evacuation point, which is in the car park at the side of the Town Hall. Welcome, everyone. So, present, we are all here. We have Councillor Tanya King, who is Zooming in because she has lost her voice, or main of her voice. So we just have to be aware that we need to recognise that Councillor King is still here, and you need to yell out, Councillor King, if I don't see you, or whatever. So, no apologies. Everyone's in attendance. The staff, thank you. Confirmation of the minutes. Would somebody like to move? Somebody like to second that the minutes of the ordinary meeting Tuesday 13th of October be received and confirmed? Councillor Sheriff, thank you. Seconder, please. Councillor Knott, thank you. Put the vote. All those in favour? Aye. Against? All in favour. Thanks, Councillor King. The council workshops held since last meeting are listed. You have announcements by the Mayor. You have announcements by councillors. Declarations of interest.
Yes, we have.
Can you turn your microphone on, GM, please? Yep, that's right.
John Jordan, General Manager speaking. I have a declaration of interest from Councillor Sinfield in relation to Planning Authority 1, and also have a declaration of interest by email from Councillor King. I've considered both of those and don't believe that they're material issues to impede voting on those two matters. And I have a declaration from Mayor Johnston in relation to Infrastructure 1, and I don't believe that ownership of the property on that road that is proposed to be renamed is again a material issue that would prevent voting.
Thanks, GM. Tabling and actions on petitions.
Neil,
thank you. Public question time. Public question time. We have questions that were presented and have been answered by the General Manager and by Justin Town Planner. Yep, good. Done. No other questions from the public, obviously. Nope, just checking. Nope. Council questions Council questions taken on notice, there are nil. Council questions taken with notice, one from Councillor Bauer. That was responded to by the GM. And councillor questions without notice. Councillor Temple is asking. Yes, Councillor Temple. I think we can guess this one, but let's see.
We'll see. In recognition of Joseph R. Biden.
Oh
Jr.
No! Come on, we're not used to this. Everyone take notice.
To soon adopt the mantle of leader of the free world. And as he is likely to be the greatest agent of change, we'll meander for council this Tuesday as an urgent item consider naming the Westbury Cricket Ground Joseph R. Biden Jr. Park in his office and wish him well for his term of leadership. In considering this question today, it should be remembered that the Meander Valley relies largely on the goodwill of the Oval Office for its security. And in considering this matter today, we can be amongst the first in the world to confer such an honour.
Was that a motion that you would like, Councillor Temple, or is it it's a question?
Yes.
Well, I think we will take that on notice, if that's all right. Councillor Knott, do you wish to you don't want to respond to Councillor Temple's?
No.
I'll ask you to turn your microphone on. We will take your question on...
I have a second question.
Oh, sorry, second question, Councillor Temple, yes?
Which is the one that you probably envisaged. Is there any further update on any developments with the proposed prison? For the record,
For the recording, John Jordan, no, Councillor.
Thank you, Councillor Temple. Councillor Knott.
Just one. Mr Mayor and Councillors, I forwarded photos of a bus turning from Westbury Road into Bimbimbi Avenue in Prospect Vale. This metro bus cannot turn without encroaching over the centre dividing line and thus impeding traffic leaving Bimbimbi Avenue. Secondly, I provided a second photograph to Director Duno of a sign in Olive Street, Newstead, where the above circumstances occurred for buses turning the corner. Launceston City Council established a sign which said, "Caution, buses turning." Question: would Council consider a similar sign on Bimbimbi Avenue to make drivers aware that a bus could be turning from Westbury Road and Bimbimbi Avenue in order to prevent a potential collision in the interest of safety? I'd love to hear it and pass it over to...
Thank you, Councillor.
And the two photos have been sent to Director Dino.
Any comments, General Manager? If not...
I'll defer to Director Dino.
Through you, Mr Mayor, we've confirmed we've received information from Councillor Knott and we're investigating and we'll report back once we have some details at hand. Signage is maybe one solution, but line marking or other treatments could also provide a solution to this particular issue.
At Olive Street, Houston, there is line marking as well as the sign. Because if when it does happen, and the bus turns that corner, any car that's forward...
Thank you, Councillor. Councillors, any other questions without notes? Yep. Now, come on, turn your microphone on and you may as well, Councillor Sinfield.
As a supplementary question to Councillor Temples, should we be getting the advice of the incumbent president before going down the path of renaming said oval, given a motion that came before us a few years ago? It might be worth getting his input.
I'll take that on notice, Councillor Sinfield. I doubt whether you'll take my phone call at the moment, though, but thank you.
He would if you ask him for a game of golf.
Okay. Moving on. Thank you. Righto. For the purposes of considering the following planning authority items, Council is acting as a planning authority under the provisions of the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act 1993. Planning Authority 1 is 5918 Bass Highway, Elizabethtown. And we have Krista.
Yep.
Krista is going to read a statement. And then we have some follow-up answers, I guess, from Justin to that statement. So, Krista, I'll ask you to read the statement, thank you, on behalf of Evelyn Shelton.
This is a statement by Evelyn and Philip Shelton. I, Evelyn and Philip Shelton, are the adjoining property landowners to the east and south side of the planning applicant. Shown within the planning application, Bass Highway Acquired Road, identified as road with no CT reference. Concern: there's been a lack of disclosure and transparency. Should the planning be passed by Council, a further acquisition would be made by Crown, Parks and Wildlife, from our land to replace the section of this road we believe the Crown intend giving the planning applicant. All correspondence to Crown Land Service regarding the reserve road since receiving notification of the planning application has gone unanswered. To make a further acquisition on lots 5336 and 5337, the purpose it was taken under the Resumption Act 1910 would amount to profiteering at the cost of the landowner. Entertaining an application for releasing land in favour of the planning applicant years after the acquisition amounts to transfer of resources of the poor at the cost of benefiting the rich. To take a further acquisition is against the philosophy of the Constitution and in violation of our fundamental rights to property. Land acquired under the Proclamation, Roads and Jetties Act 1993. Reserved road is a strip of Crown land usually retained by the Crown for future road access by private landowners to their private property. We don't have an issue with the planned improvements by the applicant as long as it's within their own land. That's the end of the statement.
Thanks, Krista. And Justin, you have some comments for the councillors on that statement?
So we have received some advice from the Department of Primary Industries, Parks, Water and Environment. We asked if there was any intention to give the road reserve to United or the service station landowner. They responded there are no plans to gift Crown land. Would such a proposal generally be managed by licence agreement or some other means? They confirmed a Crown access licence is being contemplated for use of a small section of the existing reserve road. Has there been any discussion or application to sell the land? No, not as far as Property Services is aware. Would Crown intend to acquire additional land to make up for any land sold? No, not as far as Property Services is aware. What consultation is involved with the sale of Crown land and the acquisition of land? Council would likely be contacted regarding its view on any sale or acquisition, but no sale is being contemplated.
Thanks. Justin? Okay. Philip Shelton, do you wish to... No, that's fine. Elby Harrison? No.
Elby's okay.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
No more representatives then? Okay. Okay, on that basis, I will put the motion as it stands. Would somebody like to move the motion, please? Councillor Cameron. Thank you. Sorry, Councillor King, I didn't see you. Is that for me? No, good. Seconder for the motion? Do we have a seconder for the motion? Councillor Kelly, thank you. As a mover of the motion, Councillor Cameron, any discussion, comments?
I don't really have anything to add. I was pleased to see that there would be some work done in the fencing for screening, but probably more importantly for me that there would be some upgrades to the road to make the entry and exit safer.
Okay. Sorry, we've just got a question coming through from Councillor King, but we'll move on. Councillor Kelly is the seconder of the motion. Thank you. So we have some questions coming through from Councillor King via email, which I'll ask Justin to read and then potentially put it to the planning staff to answer.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Through you, Councillor King. How will the adjoining landowner access their property on the south side of the current reserve road? Their crossover licence access is in line with the road reserve. That has been acknowledged by both the Crown and by the Department of State Growth, and in the access works that have to be done to upgrade that exit, they do have to take into consideration the use of that access by the adjoining property owner, and as much as is possible, they have to maintain separation between those two, the exit and that access to that property. So it's a little bit in the hands of the Department of State Growth to determine exactly what is considered to be safe and reasonable for that environment.
Any other questions?
Just the second question. With the planned one-way entry and using the Crown Reserve Road for the exit, how would other landowners access their private properties beyond? Being a bushfire-prone zone, in the event of a bushfire, will adequate provisions for the access of fire response vehicles be considered? Similarly, with the first answer, there's been no suggestion that access to that road reserve will be hindered in any way. It's simply unlikely that will occur. Now, the location that the exit is going to be on is actually very close to where it is now. It's likely that it's already over that boundary into the road reserve, so there's likely going to be very little actual change to what's there now. So that road reserve would remain available for use as it is now, for emergency services and for access purposes as it is now. Third question, I refer to the letter from Crown Land Services on page 80 that clearly states that if planning approval is given for the proposed development, the applicant would be required to obtain a separate and distinct consent from the Crown before commencing any works on Crown land. Does this mean that the issue of Crown land access for the neighbouring landowners is vulnerable? Through you, Mr. Mayor, I don't believe that it is vulnerable. The Crown, through informal discussions I've had with them, there would be no actions taken by any Crown department that would take away anyone's access to their property. It's just not a good political move in any way, shape or form. But beyond that, in terms of consents to undertake works, that's a common process with planning, is that consent is provided for Crown land to lodge an application, but then the actual consent to do the works is a separate approval process. So it could be that while council might approve this process, if the Crown decides that they don't want to issue a permit to do that work, then this permit would not be they could not act on this permit.
Thank you, Justin. Councillors, Councillor Sinfield. I'll ask to turn your microphone on, Councillor Sinfield.
A couple of very minor housekeeping things. On page 20 and 21, the notes section, whilst note 2 and note 6, the difference by one word was it the intention that both those notes actually be in there? In other words, note 2 says an application for a plumbing permit will be required at the building and plumbing permit application stage for the on-site wastewater system servicing the development, which I would have thought included the building. Note 6 then says exactly the same thing but says servicing the building. Is one superfluous to the other, or does it confuse anyone, or is it meant to be there as a difference between the, that there is some difference between development and building? Sorry, I would have raised that earlier, but I was suspecting that I may not have been present for this and not contributed.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, that's simply an oversight. There's no distinct difference between the two conditions. It's simply a matter that it's a note, it's not a condition, it doesn't require anything to be done, it's just notifying them that a wastewater assessment will be required under the Building Act and that issue around wastewater will be resolved via that. So one of those can be deleted at your discretion.
Do we need to do that, or can we? Do we need to amend the? Is it part of the recommendation? Well, it is in a sense.
I don't believe it would be necessary because it's simply stating the obvious, but you could amend it if you wish to.
And the other thing is slightly pedantic, but on page 19 it says in condition 7, commercial vehicles not attending the site to refuel. Well, lots of people would attend the site to refuel their vehicle. I did wonder about changing the wording to commercial vehicles excluding tanker refuelling operations must only operate between those hours, simply for the avoidance of I mean, we know what we're talking about, but and I use that term because it was elsewhere in the background document by the applicant.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, you could change it, I guess, if you would like to read commercial vehicles, including tankers refuelling or servicing the station, and not to attend the site outside of those hours. The hours are there to the planning scheme. The planning scheme is it MAT controls the visitation of commercial vehicles. And it was simply put on there to distinguish between commercial vehicles versus vehicles that appear to be commercial vehicles but are not performing a commercial activity at that site.
I was reading that to basically say that if such and such bakery turned up to replenish the bread supply, they weren't to come outside of those hours. But what I'm getting at is I'm assuming you're wanting to allow the refuelling of the service station itself to occur at any hour, because it's a bulk thing and they probably do operate out of hours to minimise the, well, they don't always, but to minimise the interaction.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, that wasn't my intention, but no. But if you feel that is something that you would like, that they can attend to refuel outside of those hours, then you would need to amend that condition to reflect that.
So I'm now confused about what vehicles you were attempting to... So you were actually intending that customer vehicles didn't attend outside those hours?
No, it's excluding customer vehicles. So it's commercial vehicles excluding, say, you drive a bakery truck, but you're not providing bakery goods to that service station, you will drive into that service station and refuel. So it's excluding any customer vehicles refuelling at the service station. So that you driving your bakery truck is not mistaken as a service vehicle servicing that facility.
Okay. So that would technically preclude the fuel tanker from turning up at midnight to refuel the station?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, and as I said, so if you would like to amend that to allow them to show up at midnight, then you could do that.
Councillor, you turned your microphone off, sorry.
I was interpreting it as the opposite, that you were in fact saying, okay, if you were refuelling the station, you could go there out of hours, but if you were delivering other supplies, no, but that's not your intended form.
No.
Okay. Thank you. Councillor Knott.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just a question. I've got something other to say a little later on. But on page 156, Mr. Plummer, a letter from Gary Hills of Gary Hills State Growth. Is there part of the letter missing? I think it goes on to bushfire. Bottom of page 156. Letter sent on Thursday, the 5th of December 2019. May have been an old one because there's information from above on the 9th of September 2020. It's been omitted.
So it hasn't been included. It's simply correspondence from myself to them to say, have you received this information? And then responding to say, either at that point it would have been either a yes we have or a no we haven't. So it's not information that would assist in any decision making.
Councillor Sinfield.
Yes, if I may, page 169 says, this is part of the background documents, it says, it's to do with bushfire assessment, it says performance criteria for E1.5.1 of the scheme, well, I've added that in, is vulnerable uses to be developed as part of the town planner's submission and will not form part of this assessment. So going back to the assessment itself, there's simply a comment there somewhere. Taking my finger out of it. out of the document. We have on page 37, we have stated E1.5.2. Have we dealt with? I thought we did. You've got E1.5.2 hazardous use. Have you dealt with the one they referred to, or are they wrong?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. That's incorrect on their behalf. The use is not a vulnerable use. That clause is not applicable. Therefore, while they've mentioned in a highlight, I would suggest that it was clearly meant to either be deleted or addressed. In this case, it would have been appropriate for that to be deleted.
And following on from that, then, you've said in response to E1.5.2, which includes things such as there is no suitable alternative lower-risk site, your answer, I guess, going amongst a collection of answers, is the location of the development is considered essential to the proposal as it is for the upgrade of an existing facility on the site rather than a new facility. How does that sit with Chief Justice Blow's decision in relation to the primary school at Meander? I realise that the wording of the provision has changed slightly since he made that decision, but in terms of the concept of only in exceptional circumstances do we do this, how do you see that fitting in with or relevant to the answer you've given?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, and Joe might be able to add to this slightly, depending on the circumstances, but my understanding is that the code was changed such that it reads that you must have regard to it, doesn't elevate those to being standards that are compulsory standards requiring the same test that was required under the planning scheme at the time of the Meander School decision.
I guess that's getting a little bit philosophical. Regard to, I think courts have decided, means you must have regard to them, but you're not limited to regard to them. You can take other things into account. But do you think we've assessed that in terms of that we're simply revamping the existing site? Do you think that overrides that provision or...?
I don't think that it overrides. I believe that, as you said, you can widen your consideration, and the fact that this is going to, in fact, have less risk than what is there now due to the fact that it is now managed for bushfire risk where it was not previously makes it consistent that this is a reasonable proposition.
Thanks, Councillor. Any other councillors with questions? Councillor Knott? Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Like others have said, I believe the conditions have been dealt with, or dealt with some of the issues there. I was particularly... I thought it was a very sensible and responsible addition in relation to the boundary fence and the 1.7 metre screen. I think the planner and council have listened to the representation in that regard, and even the safety bollard is an advantage and covers some of the problems that were mentioned in the representations. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Knott. Any other questions, councillors? If not, go to the seconder of the motion, Councillor Kelly. No comment. Mover of the motion, Councillor Cameron. No comment. If not, then I'll put the motion. All those in favour of the motion, please raise your hand and I will name you for the purposes of the audio. So all those in favour, please say aye. That is everyone. Councillor King, sorry. And all those against? Okay, so councillors Johnston, Kelly, Cameron, Knott, Sinfield, Temple, Sheriff, Bower are for and Councillor King is against. She's for. No, she's against. Yeah, okay, thank you. Righto. Thank you. Okay. So 8-1. Thanks, Councillor King, I got that. Okay. Thank you. Got the dog in the background too, thanks. Oh, it's out here, is it? Okay. Moving on. So those with Planning Authority 1, if you don't want to sit through the rest of the meeting, you can feel free to leave at the moment. Okay. Planning Authority 2. Everyone's back. Which is 239 Wadley's Road, Reedy's Marsh. We go to... Yeah. As the applicant, Mr Heathcote, Paul Heathcote, we'll get you to come up and address the council. You've got 3 minutes, Paul, to have a conversation, well, a statement to us. Okay, all yours, Paul.
Okay, my name's Paul Heathcote from 239 Wadley's Road, Reedy's Marsh. I'd like to thank the council just for the opportunity to speak on behalf of the proposed subdivision. I've owned the property for approximately 5 years. I originally intended to divide the block after I constructed a house. So I was aware that... the lot sizes are smaller than the proposed 15 hectares, but just to the nature of the land, I was unable to divide into larger lots. So just on the lots that are there, they've got natural divisions as they stand, so less clearing. Lot 2 has a road that boundaries the property, so visually there'd be no clearing, or as it stands to look at it, it looks like a separate lot anyway. Lot 1, when we installed power to the adjoining property, which is an agricultural property, the line was cleared for the power line under Aurora's supervision, so there's a natural division between the lot 1, so to construct a fence line through there would be very minimal in removal of trees, that's the natural division there. The land in question has no agricultural use. It's basically like a lifestyle block, so I don't have equipment to maintain probably the bushland, whereas I'm keeping the agricultural lots so I can maintain that. All the fence line which we improved was done under consultation with the council. A lot of the trees were on the actual council road, and a few of them were a safety risk, so we removed them and constructed a new fence line. Prior to commencing the subdivision, I spoke to all the neighbours and both all the residents up Wadley's Road. I had no objections whatsoever. A few of them were encouraging me to do so. I think you might have letters there that were emailed forwarded to you, adjoining neighbours. So there was no issues there. As I said, both lots 1 and 2 have natural divisions. There's several other lots of similar sizes approved in the area over a period of time. So lot 1, as I explained before, I spent some time with Joe out there, and we walked over the property, and there was limited removal of vegetation required if a possible house site was allowed to be there. No visual impact, so that one met most of the criteria. Obviously the size creating house sites would probably reduce the fire risk, with people maintaining the property, with a clearing of a 30 metre buffer zone around a house site. There's other dwellings in the area basically on the edge of the road, so I don't believe there's too much visual impact there. Lot 2 was probably a bit of a concern of one house site on the top of it, but there's potentially two or three other house sites. With the visual aspect side of it, there is, you know, with modern building and that, and an example is my house, which blends in with the bush, so I'm not out to diminish the values of the Reedy Marsh. So in summing up, there's potential for two new dwellings, two new families to move to the area. You've got potentially two more rate payers. I'd suggest as a municipality we should try and encourage more families to move to the area. Yes, and I'd just like to thank the council and hope they could use their discretion in approving this proposed subdivision. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Heathcote. Do we have any?
No.
No? No. Councillor Knott?
Mr. Ricketts, Mr. Ricketts,
we're going to ask you if you could read it out. No, Councillor. For the recording, John Jordan, General Manager. No, Mr. Ricketts lodged a letter this morning. Our position on that is that an extension of his representation and came too late. We've circulated it to all councillors for consideration via email, but it won't be read out today.
Thank you, GM. Okay, and on that basis, on the paperwork, I'll ask somebody to move this proposal. Councillor Knott will move. Seconder for this. Councillor Temple. Councillor Knott as a mover.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. All councils will have the opportunity to listen to developers' representations and take heed of the expert planner's recommendation written and read everything in the agenda. Listen to what other councils have to say, their arguments for and against. Planning staff and council have provided comprehensive details and info, photographs to and comments, and assess this application for refusal. As our council information says, those elected to represent their views, the community, when it comes to approved development, they must be consistent with the Meander Valley planning scheme. Not only councillors put their reasons today, but their decision must adhere to the planning scheme requirements. While there might be some wriggle room in discretion, there must be a degree of compliance with acceptable solutions or performance criteria. You just can't do what you like with your own land. There are limitations, and we're acting in a different format when we're acting in a planning scheme. There is an intent with the 2013 interim planning scheme, particularly Amendment 4 of the local area provision. It was an agreement decided between the landholders, the council planners and the planning commission, where they came up with a minimum lot of 15 hectares to retain the density and setbacks and bushfire protection of the rural living zone without erosion of the character of Reedy Marsh. This application, 25.3 hectares, divided into three lots, 15.7, 5.1 and 4.7. Lots 1 and 2 are well below the 15 hectare minimum. Lot 1 is fine, I understand. Lot 2 is not consistent with the local area objective nor the desired future characteristics, with no possibility of conditions which would be acceptable. I believe you can't step outside the scheme and lower lot sizes just to comply with objectives. Granted, there is a range of challenging topography on Mr. Heathcote's property. It might be acceptable. I believe that there might be an option to have to change the different complexion of the design. I've spoken to Mr. Heathcote twice and apologise for not visiting the site, but I have driven in the area since I was elected at council in 2018 in the area, and Rivers Road, River Road, Wadley's Road, Farrell's Road, John's Road and Sadler's Run Road. Must take into account the if this recommendation was overturned today, if it was overturned today, or if it was approved, even though I opposed another 2 5-hectare lots at the previous meeting, if this was approved today, if this was not approved today, in other words, it didn't take on the refusal, it would change the area completely from a quiet, peaceful setting, and think of the additional infrastructure and road, power, water service and so on, where there were lots of 5-hectare lots. With the new planning scheme soon implemented by the Tasman Planning Commission, it would be a mandatory 12-hectare lot size. So these two applications, the one last week and last month, and are getting in before the stable door shuts. I believe Mr. Heathcote has an option, but I'm not sure whether he wants to pursue that, so that maybe council could agree to it. Unfortunately, contrary to the provisions in the scheme, proposed arrangements of lots in this location does not meet the performance criteria, and in addition cannot be conditioned to satisfy other situations. For those reasons, I agree with the refusal on those grounds, lot size and compliance. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Knott. Councillor Temple as the seconder to the motion. Nothing to say. Okay, Councillor Bower.
Could I have senior planner, please? Can you provide some advice in relation to lot 2 and 1? And whether, if the boundaries were actually altered, whether this could actually comply, because obviously lot 3 is okay.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. In terms of the decision at hand, there's a limit to which council can require or condition that the boundaries of lot 2 may change. So, first instance, yes, I believe there is an option for lot 2 that could achieve compliance, but not within the scope that's open to council to condition as part of this decision. As part of an alternate resubmitted design, yes, there are options. It's important to acknowledge, as I have done in the report and following Mr. Heathcote's submission, it's important to acknowledge that we understand, and I certainly understand, the logic of why the boundaries are drawn where they are in terms of what Mr. Heathcote is proposing. And I've made a particular point of acknowledging the amount of work that Mr. Heathcote and his family have put into rejuvenating this site, and it's a heck of a lot. So in understanding, I want to acknowledge that we understand that and understand that there's a logic to the proposal. But that logic to the proposal doesn't negate compliance with the standards of the planning scheme. So in my opinion, I only believe that Lot 2 can comply with a reasonable degree of configuration to provide for a dwelling location that is not visible to Wadley's Road and also does not require standing vegetation clearance. There is no site available on proposed Lot 2 that does both. But there is land behind the hill, not visible from Wadley's Road, that is clear, that could be utilised for a dwelling site that would enable Lot 2 to comply, but it's beyond the scope of our ability to condition. Does that go far enough? Yeah.
Okay, councillors. Councillor Kelly.
Question to Joe. You post an importance of having the house located where it's not visible from the users of Wadley's Road. What would the traffic movements be of Wadley's Road, and what would be so wrong with the house being visible?
The point about a house being visible is that there's a clear statement in the planning scheme, Councillor Kelly, under the desired future character statements, that future development is to achieve low levels of visibility. So existing dwellings dating back 100 years, yes, are visible in some circumstances through Wadley's Road. The fact that there are some dwellings that are visible throughout Reedy Marsh does not negate the clear statement of intent in the scheme that says achieve low levels of visibility. There is no get out of jail free card because there are others that you can see. And that was the deal that was done in 2015 when the rules were set about if we're going to significantly densify the residential opportunity in Reedy Marsh, this was how it was going to happen. Just because there were 20 dwellings visible in Reedy Marsh at that point in time, it didn't mean that we wanted another 100. So the deal was is that Reedy Marsh had ample capacity to accommodate pretty decent numbers of additional dwellings. But that would be done in a way that would be very low levels of visibility and would minimise the need to clear standing vegetation. There were plenty of opportunities that could achieve both, and that was the goal. The requirement of the scheme is to achieve both. So in terms of your question about what's wrong with seeing it, there's nothing essentially wrong except that the planning scheme says that is not the intent for this area. There are other areas which do allow visibility, and those scheme statements say that. That is not the case for this area.
Thanks, Joe. Councillor Sheriff.
I've got a question for Joe. So this scheme that came out in 2015, this is an in-house scheme, not a Tasmanian Planning Commission scheme. This is done through the Meander Valley Council.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. That's correct. This was Meander Valley's Rural Living Amendment. Yep. And this was a big amendment, one of the biggest that had been achieved in the state in terms of a broad strategy for rural residential lifestyle blocks, yep, to give them certainty. And they were very targeted in terms of each of the areas that we went to, and they are dispersed across the entire municipality, and they all look very different. And each of those communities had different expectations about what they wanted to see in those areas. And so the consultation that we undertook at the time, the matters that were tabled and debated through the Planning Commission hearings at the time, we talked about all of those values and the levels that were set in terms of lot sizes for each of those areas. So the lot sizes that are set in each of those areas, whether it be Reedy Marsh, Birralee, Davis's Road area, Golden Valley, they're all based on what the intention is for each of those very unique areas in terms of if we're going to allow another 30, 40 dwellings, what is that area going to look like? What do people value about living there? And what degree of change are those communities prepared to accept? So they're the sorts of conversations that led to the standards that you see in the scheme now.
So considering the location of this development, it's obviously not at the start of Wadley's Road. So the likeliness of tourists driving up to there and seeing a house dotted somewhere that shouldn't probably be in the scheme. What is the... Look, does this scheme need revisiting?
Obviously,
the world's ever-changing. We're constantly developing land, changing the purpose of land from agriculture to, rural residential area. So at what point, should this be revisited?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, that's entirely Council's prerogative. If you think we are not making the most of the opportunities in this area, the value of having 5 years under our belt of the rural living zones and some subdivisions and new developments that have come in, we're seeing also different levels of demand on those blocks than we were 5 years ago. It is certainly within Council's purview to revisit the planning scheme settings in another amendment or to go out and test it and see whether, in fact, the standards are a bit too tight. The Tasmanian planning scheme coming in, even though the Tasmanian Planning Commission have required the notification of a substantial modification, because our initial LPS submission had the lot size set in accordance with the Tasmanian planning scheme, which was a minimum lot size of 10 hectares and a mandatory minimum cap of 8 hectares, so you could go down to 8. The substantial modification that's just been notified, on the basis of representations that were made, not many, it was only two, they have directed us to notify a minimum lot size of 15 hectares with a minimum mandatory cap of 12 hectares. Now, if we think that is just too restrictive, it is within our rights to pursue an individual change to that. But we've got some work to do to prove the case. That doesn't mean that a case wouldn't stand up 5 years down the track. So I take your point, and yes, it's in your prerogative to do that. It's a reasonable strategic exercise to revisit. It's just the difficulty is individual planning applications such as this one is not the forum to do that, because we're working on the rules that were set at the time and they're the ones that apply, the intention.
Yeah, if I can speak again, it's not my prerogative to go against council. That's not what I'm here for, to go against the grain, but obviously last council meeting we approved lots of five hectares, and obviously I come to council to help the municipality develop, and people that want to develop it, we've sort of got to help them kick them along. So
can I just say that not at any point in this time ever has this council been anti-development, nor has its planners. The Rural Living Amendment of 2015 was one of the hardest amendments I've ever had to do, pushing against the philosophical conservatism of the Tasmanian Planning Commission to get, across our municipality, we freed up over 350 lots potential for development. That's huge. No one else has been able to achieve it. In doing so, in getting that privilege, we made a deal with certain communities. And the deal set the objectives to maintain quality for particular areas. Now, what we're saying for this particular proposal, and I still believe, there is the ability to achieve a three-lot subdivision on this site in a different way. So I'm certainly not supporting locking it up or going below 3 hectares. I just don't believe that this particular configuration stacks up. So also support new residents, new houses, new opportunities. That's what the whole amendment was actually about. And it was hugely successful for that. But we have to honour the deal, in my view.
Thank you. Councillors? Councillor Kelly?
Thank you, Mayor. Joe, when you look at this particular country, and I know that you're looking at a different rule book to me, but common sense should prevail in some cases. When you look at the nature of the land here, it's not prime ag land or anything that's really going to contribute, to the economy or anything in that sort of scale. But to increase the housing there, that would increase the value, I would assume, of the property. So, I just have a different opinion on this one, Jeff.
Thanks, Councillor. Any other councillors? Discussion? Councillor Knott? Microphone, please, Councillor.
To the senior planner, strategic planner. To Joe, in your opinion, is this refusal defendable if it was taken to appeal? Refusal to defend.
I believe so, Councillor.
Thank you. Question from me to the planner. Joe, if this particular lot had been put up as two titles compared to three titles, what were the chances of this being passed be?
Do you mean, for example, lot one and a balanced lot with no lot two?
Or straight down the middle? Well, I'm looking at it so that you don't go and try and dissect the Ovata plantation, which is, well, sorry, the Ovata's not the plantation, which is there, where is the proposed boundary at the moment. So therefore, if we're looking at hectares that come in, they could be rearranged so that it's two lots instead of three. Would it potentially get through?
Two lots is obviously comfortably achievable. As I say in the report, I am comfortable with a house site on lot one in terms of the area that Mr. Heathcote showed me, which I've shown in the photographs. There is one that's achievable in there, irrespective actually of where you draw the boundary around the Ovata, irrespective of which side of the creek it's on. It achieves the same outcome. Similarly, you could do a subdivision through that property where all of that land stays with the current Heathcote dwelling and a new block is created more to the north where there's cleared land and there's the ability to site a dwelling over on the cleared land over behind the hill, which you wouldn't see from Wadley's Road. So that would also achieve compliance comfortably. Either way, I still believe would achieve compliance. I also still believe you can achieve compliance with three in a different configuration that achieves exactly the same outcomes.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Bower.
You kind of just answered my question. It was going to be, can you achieve three lots with some... Yeah. And the answer is yes. Thank you.
Revisit something you said then. I think the first part of your previous answer was there was that you could put a house on lot one, and I wonder whether you meant lot two.
No, sorry, lot one. So proposed lot one, which identifies a house, a likely house site on good flat land in a previous clearing which requires very little vegetation removal, which is the site I've got the photograph of in the report, that would be the most obvious and best, and I think needs to be, and if council were of a view to approve, needs to be designated. So nominate that as a house site. Where you draw any boundary of that proposed lot one, whether it be on the southern side of the creek or the northern side of the creek, makes no difference to the actual outcomes in terms of where you locate a dwelling and meeting those desired future character statements and local area objectives. Yeah. So in terms of any potential future lot two, I believe there's another option for configuration that would be able to meet the desired future character statements and objectives.
But in terms of lot one, you're saying that, yes, you can find a house site, and it's currently what's there as proposed for 5.1 hectares. Are you saying that lot one down to that size is, whether it's on one side of the creek or the other, and maybe changing the lot size very marginally, is acceptable down at that size as a lot in its own right?
And under the same provisos that I've outlined, those 4 points, those four measures, it achieves the same outcomes as if it were 8 hectares or 10, because what you're doing is you're managing the physical outcome, and you can achieve low levels of visibility and you can minimise the clearance of standing vegetation.
And following on, if I may, then lot two, you can't see in terms of the house site, you can't anywhere on lot two that cuts the mustard in terms of just that element of it?
Which element?
Well, of a house.
In terms of proposed lot two, because of its sort of micro topography, so to speak, you've got the cleared slope, previously cleared slope that overlooks Wadley's Road on the corner. And then you've got the flat bit at the top, which is vegetated with you know, reasonable aged standing vegetation, which would require a great degree of clearance if you were to locate a dwelling up there. So if you located a dwelling on the cleared slope, you wouldn't meet the visibility, low levels of visibility test. If you put a dwelling on the top of the hill, you would have to clear a fairly substantive amount of vegetation, and you wouldn't, not only would you not meet the visibility test, you would also not meet the minimising of clearance of standing vegetation requirement in terms of the way the boundaries are drawn in this proposal.
So if I'm understanding rightly, just it's not what's before us, but where on page 243, where the lot 3 number is, if you sort of went, you know, just for the purpose of what we're talking about here, if you simply took that highly changeable boundary, which has, you know, for example, 69 metres and then 141 just above it, if you simply went from the 69 somewhere, just for argument's sake, straight through the 3 to the where it says contour 280 to the southwest, that kind of an alteration would probably be enough to be viewed differently in the overall context.
Councillors, we're delving into something that's not potentially in front of us at the moment.
Well, it's not, but I'm just wondering, like, is that sort of how close, in a sense, to being viewed differently, this might be?
I would say, Councillor, through you, Mr. Mayor, I would say, Councillor, there's a number of options that could achieve the compliance with both the desired future character statements and local area objectives. You could draw the boundaries in many different locations and provide a house site that can achieve both of those.
Thank you. Councillor Sheriff.
Obviously, I've made my point pretty clear that I'd like to see, you know, something like this go ahead. Is there an option for an alternate motion on the provisions that Lot 2 is altered to comply with? The lot that would tick the deal?
That's a very good question.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. I wish I could say yes, but my concern is that we would be going into a territory that would be altering the application too much in substance that it might invalidate our decision. So I'm going to say no.
Yep. Are we going into a territory where this doesn't even get a Guernsey, though? So the option of... the option of an alternate motion could actually get it a Guernsey, whereas at this stage, I don't know, put it to the vote.
So you're saying at the moment that a refusal would be...
Joe's saying that it could get refused in Rampat.
Yeah.
So if it goes to tribunal, this proposal could be lost. So...
yeah.
You know, if we don't want that, but there is grounds that it could get up on a three-lot subdivision, do we do an alternate motion that means that Lot 2 is changed, its boundaries changed to suit what could potentially get passed in Rampat if it did go to tribunal?
You're asking a question that I can't answer, Councillor.
That's what I'm here for.
Do you have an answer for this, Councillor Kelly, or not?
No.
Oh, come on. Well, then Joe's a bit...
I'd be really keen to hear it if you did.
Any comment, Joe, to Councillor Sheriff, or...?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Okay, so the complexity with going beyond... making decisions that are potentially beyond power is that they can be challenged in the Rampat, or they can be challenged in court. And if our decision is beyond power, the cost implications for council either at the Rampat or court could be significant. It's what worries me either way, is if we push it too far in terms of a condition, in terms of the modification of the boundary. My concern would be, say, for example, council made an alternate decision and conditioned the boundaries to change in such a way that really didn't suit Mr. Heathcote's purposes, he would take that to the tribunal. And if it were found that council acted beyond power in making that decision by changing the application too far, the decision could be invalidated and the cost implications could be significant. That's all worries me. I can't categorically say that would be the case. It's just in my experience, it's a bit of a test of merits as to when you push something a step too far. But that's council's risk. Okay, so yes, you're right. You are right. And that's a risk. Taking alternate decision also risks appeal by the representers. That's always a risk as well. Obviously, council needs to make its decision in reference to the planning scheme. Decisions are always a lot safer in terms of any alternate motion you want to make, that you make reference to the terms of the planning scheme in regards to the changes that you want to make. That's safer in terms of risk. And the tribunal would determine whether or not it was within the scope of reason and power. That would be my suggestion, Councillor. I can't give you a categoric, yeah, it'll be fine. I'm a bit worried. And that's why I've recommended refusal as opposed to recommending a modification, even though I've made it very clear that I think, both in the report and here at the table, that I think there's a modification there that can reasonably meet the scheme and still give Mr. Heathcote three. It won't suit Mr. Heathcote's purposes, I know that, because of the conversations we've had and the reasons why he's explained that he's drawn the boundaries where they are. But that is not a factor that we can consider as a planning authority. Our decisions must be in reference to the scheme. But you're right, is a slightly less optimal three lots better than nothing?
Yeah. Okay, moving on. Just to clarification, Councillor Sheriff, if you are thinking about an alternative motion, then you actually need to foreshadow that motion before we take a vote on this motion. So just to let you think about that. A couple more questions from councillors. Councillor Kelly, microphone, please.
Question to the General Manager. If what's before us doesn't get support, what happens?
Then it's refused.
So what's in front of us is to refuse?
Yep, you can put up an alternative motion or amend the motion. So if you're not going to support, it'll be deemed approved. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, that's right. So if council votes not to support the motion, then my understanding is that the application will effectively be deemed approved.
And then if it's taken to appeal... Sorry, we're working our way through this. This is unusual for us councillors to spend this long on debate, but if it is then appealed...
You'd normally put up a second motion after the... If we didn't agree with the recommendation to refuse, we'd then normally put up a second motion in the alternate language to approve it.
To approve.
And then the reasons why we've gone against the recommendation would form part of that subsequent motion.
So Governance Officer, Jackie.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Just a comment on process there in relation to the deeming provision under LUPA. So if this motion to refuse is lost as a motion, then as has just been indicated, that means that there has been no decision made by you as a planning authority. If we then complete the meeting and time's up, there is a short window in which council can still issue a permit on conditions that it can set. But after that, it goes to the tribunal and the tribunal would take that role effectively stand in council's shoes, and I'm happy for Joe if you want to step in and correct me there.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. I would strongly recommend that if council is not of a mind to support this recommendation, that somebody foreshadow an alternate motion to approve, and that council takes an alternate motion to approve this proposal with conditions. There is far less risk to council of going to a tribunal under those circumstances than in not making a decision and being subject to Section 59, because the catch with Section 59 and not making a decision is that anybody with an interest can lodge to be in a party to that process, and we pick up everybody's costs, everybody's. The last one that I was involved in, which was in my 2 weeks of starting at council, cost this council, I need to add it wasn't my fault, but I had to pick it up when I started, cost this council $60,000, four parties. Every expert, every lawyer, we pick up the pieces, we pick up the costs. That was four parties and it cost $60,000. You avoid that circumstance like the plague. So if you don't support my recommendation, just as you did with Farrell's Road, if you don't support it, make an alternate motion to approve it, subject to conditions. And if you want to include a condition to amend the boundary, if you consider of lot two, so that you consider that it has a reasonable prospect in your view of compliance, or not, if you don't think it matters, then your alternate motion can include those conditions. But subject to the caveat that I, you know, a little bit that I'm not sure, you know, I'm not sure about before. Yep. But by all means, please don't leave it hanging.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks, Jackie. Councillor Knott. Microphone, please, Councillor.
Out of left field, Mr. Mayor, I'm treating territory on which I'm not very much aware. If Mr. Heathcote withdrew the application today at this 11th hour, is it possible that then a new application could come forward where the provisions might be for approval?
Joe.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. We have an extension of time until tomorrow. Mr. Heathcote, if only if he was agreeable, and of course he's not compelled to, could give us an extension of time and resubmit a new proposal. It would go through the same process, but I think, you know, if there are clues in the rationale of council's decision, he may consider those options. But council's going to have to make a decision either way.
Thank you. On that basis, I'm going to adjourn the meeting for 5 minutes, and we're going to have a discussion with Mr. Heathcote, Joe, the General Manager, and myself to get a bit of a feel, if that's all right. All right. So the time is 5:39. It was a very long 5 minutes. But very constructive half an hour nearly, which I'm now going to throw to the GM to explain what we've... you can't eat your biscuit, what we've come up with. So good discussions with Mr. Heathcote and Joe, myself and the GM, to try and come up with an alternative or a proposal or a way forward.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. For the recording, John Jordan, General Manager. We've just had a discussion with Mr. Heathcote about what we perceive as three alternatives. The first is to deal with the motion on the table at the moment and make a determination against the officer's recommendations and either reject the application as it stands or not support the motion as it stands. The second alternative is for Mr. Heathcote to agree to an extension of time by close of business tomorrow and allow us to work with him to optimise the application and with a view to coming back to council in December, and that would allow us to do one of two outcomes, that in the event that the discussions to around alternatives for the lot and subdivision are acceptable with Mr. Heathcote, then we would have an alternative proposal. If not, then the original proposal as it stands before council now would be retabled at December for determination. The third option that we worked through was the scenario where an alternative motion was put to the meeting today, and that alternative motion would be contrary to the officer's recommendations and allow the application as it stands to be accepted. Mr. Heathcote, under consideration, has opted to pursue the extension of time, and so we're expecting a written consent by close of business tomorrow to extend to December to allow us to look at the how we can optimise the outcome for him and work through that space.
Councillor Sinfield.
Just a very slight technical matter. If we don't vote on this today, that's what we'd simply be putting it in abeyance, then Mr. Heathcote has until tomorrow to agree to or put in writing his extension. What happens if he doesn't? The extension of time...
If he doesn't, then the General Manager, I will determine the matter on delegation.
So on that basis, GM, we actually have a motion sits in front of us. Do I actually ask the mover of the motion to withdraw, or do I... I mean, the motion is open at the moment. It's there. I'm just wanting to...
check?
Well, I think we should... We'll take some... So I'll ask somebody to move a procedural motion. So is it actually to defer, though? Sorry, Jackie?
If the council has moved
it, it wishes to withdraw it, can do so in the second or in the OK. Yep. Councillor Knott, as the mover of the motion, are you happy to withdraw?
I am happy to withdraw.
Thank you. Councillor Temple, you're happy to, as the seconder to...
Just in doing before doing so, I'd like a little clarification. If there was no communication by close of business tomorrow,
yes,
council has not voted on this matter.
No.
So therefore, council is deemed to then approve.
No, GM.
No, I would approve it under delegation, and that would be supporting the recommendation as it stands.
So, the GM would then have delegation to. To pass what the recommendation is in front of us, John.
Okay, thank you. In that case, I'll join in the councillor Knott in withdrawing the motion.
Thank you. All councillors happy on that? Thank you. Well done. It's a learning process for all of us. Thank you, Mr. Heathcote. good debate. Good conversation, councillors. So, Paul, we've finished. If you want to. Leave. Well, we've finished your item, so thank you. Yeah, see you in a month. Well, it's an outcome, I think, that we're actually trying to work, but that's good for everyone, council, the developer and all bits. So see where we get to in a month. Okay, moving on. Planning Authority 3. I apologise, people, but we worked our way through that. Sorry, Tanya, you're happy with everything that's going on at the moment? Sorry, thank you. Thumbs up. She's up there. Good. Okay. Planning Authority 3, which is draft amendment, report representation, Panorama Road. So, somebody like to move that? Page 371. Anybody? Councillor Kelly, thank you. Second up. Thank you, Councillor Knott. Councillor Kelly is the mover.
We're opening it up for discussion.
Thank you. Councillor Knott as the seconder. Yep, thank you. Councillors, discussion from councillors. Any questions, councillors? Councillor King, you're happy? Okay, peripherally vision. Councillor King, you're happy with? No discussion from you? No, happy? Okay. Councillor Sinfield.
One thing. A couple of things actually. On page 383, you're putting in an additional reasonable condition in the qualification table, if for administrative officers on the relevant lot. Is it necessary to, and could it be gazumped anyway, to say you've got the additional bit and located within existing building? If they were to apply for an extension or whatever to a building that would then be existing, they could do it anyway. So is there any point in having a condition in there in that sense?
It's through you, Mr. Mayor. It's to narrow the frame for the TPC as opposed to it being having some prospect of a whole new building popping up for administrative offices sort of out in the suburbs, which I know is not going to go well at the TPC. So it's about fine-tuning the proposition to sort of help them get what they need, because it's quite reasonable what they need. It's a little bit out there anyway, putting this into this particular amendment. It's a reasonable proposition. Whether it'll fly or not, I don't know. But it has better prospects if it's not open slather for a whole new office building to set up.
But my point is they could apply for an office, a building for some other purpose. It would then be an existing building. You could simply use it for that purpose. That's what I'm getting at is, does it act, if somebody thinks about it, does it actually provide any restriction at all going forward?
You would have to go through something obtuse like extending the church for the church and then converting it to an administrative office. I'm not so sure anyone would bother, but you could. Yes, I suppose it is a potential gap. You know what I mean? They could use something. They could insert the text along the lines of as at the effective date, which is the date of the amendment, you know, that sort of thing. If you're really worried about it, yes, I think the TPC will flesh it out anyway, and I think it's going to struggle to get up anyway. I suspect it's probably not worth the effort, but it will be tabled for discussion at the hearings anyway, and I can table that in regards to council's concerns, just to make sure that it's not a loophole for a whole new office building to set up. It really is only just to co-locate this particular use in the existing office, in the existing church building.
Yep. And the other bit that I've flagged here was on 376. It says buildings have a setback of 5 metres, but then the new bit for vehicular and pedestrian access is 10. Is that, I'm not advocating that it be, you know, brought down to 5, but should we have been addressing the 5 for the building in like, or what would be the rationale for not having a like sort of mindset over the building setback?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, because building walls of themselves aren't necessarily active frontages, if you know what I mean. Like, the reason for works for access, pedestrians coming and going and cars coming and going, it's actually far higher impact than just the wall of a building. There's already a provision in there for like mechanical equipment being further set back, and that's the thing that actually has impact across the boundary. So, you know, let's say, for example, you know, or a shed or something like that, or an outbuilding, it would still be quite reasonable to set it back at 5 metres.
What do you do if you've got a 5 metre setback and a 10 metre setback for the walkway, so they can't actually get in the door
on that side of the building. Does that effectively say that's the back of a building and not the front of a building? Sorry, I only just thought of that. In other words, your walkway stops at 10 metres and your door's 5 metres.
That's when you just rely on your discretion, just to see what the circumstances are. Yeah.
Okay, Councillor Knott.
No, Councillor, this is already closed. This is the report on the representations. You might be thinking of Amendment 3, which was for the residential estate, which is not yet closed. Yeah.
Sorry, Councillor Sheriff. What issues? Anything to do with this for that particular?
Nothing at all. That's the local provision schedule hearings.
Okay.
Yeah.
That answers my question.
Thanks, Councillor Knott. Councillors, any other questions? Any other questions, Councillors? Comments? Councillor Temple? No. Thought she was waving for a comment, Councillor Temple. No. Okay. Other comments, questions, Councillor Knott? Yes, microphone, Councillor.
I accept what the author has said in relation to being it's a bit out there and so on, and fine tuning. And I guess the proof of the pudding's in the eating, basically. So we'll see what transpires with it. But I think we'll just see what happens. So I'll be supporting.
Thanks, Councillor Knott. Okay, if there's no other comments or questions, Councillor Knott, as the seconder of the motion, is there anything you wish further to add? Sorry. As the seconder of the motion, is there anything you wish to further to add? Thank you. Councillor Kelly, as the mover. Okay. I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye. Councillor King, yep, so that's unanimous. Marilyn, all councillors voted in favour of that. Thank you. Corporate and Service, sorry, Community and Development Services 1. Recommendation sits there. Policy 62. Somebody like to move? Somebody like to move? Councillor Cameron, thank you. Seconder? Councillor Sheriff, thank you. Councillor Cameron as the mover. Councillor Sheriff? Nope. Councillors, discussions? Councillor Sinfield?
Nope.
Thank you. Any other Councillor Knott?
Add a bit of levity to the situation because it's adhesion. It's a bit sticky for me, Mr. Mayor, so I'll be supporting it.
It's a long day. Okay. Any other comments, councillors? If not, put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye. Raise your hands. That's unanimous again. Thank you. Community Development Services 2. Somebody like to move? No, I'll move. Seconder? Councillor Knott, thank you. No, I've nothing to say as the mover. Councillor Knott?
Pretty well self-explanatory, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Any other comments, questions, councillors? Councillor Sinfield?
Do you have to vacate the chair since you moved that motion?
Oh, jeez. Okay. Deputy Mayor's got the chair. Deputy Mayor has a mouthful.
As the mover,
Mayor, do you have... No, put it up.
Put it up?
No, right. Well, it's up to... Yeah.
Any other comments?
Yes, if I may. I think it's come... Well, they probably say we haven't changed anything, but I think it has come away from a few months ago in terms of the wording. So happy to support it. There was something in there, but I've forgotten what it was. Oh,
There's a sentence on page 402, and it's probably just language. It says, "This contribution shall be no more than $500 and must be approved by the Mayor on recommendation by the General Manager." It sort of says if the General Manager... That reads to me that if the General Manager recommends it, then the Mayor must approve it. And I don't think that was the intent of the sentence. But apart from that, yes, it's come a long way.
Any other questions or comments?
No, apart from I shouldn't have moved this because the Mayor looks like he can give money away, so I shouldn't have moved that one. I was doing it for the process of getting the meeting kept going.
Councillor King? All good? As a seconder?
Happy with what?
Mover?
Happy.
Put to the vote. All those in favour?
Unanimous.
Against?
I didn't see 10. No, she was for.
Hand it back to you, Mayor.
Thank you. I'll let you finish eating your sandwich, Councillor. Infrastructure 1, proposed road names. Somebody like to move? Councillor Knott, thank you. Seconder? Councillor Cameron, thank you. Councillor Knott, any discussion?
Yes, Mr. Mayor.
Yep.
Support the names. Just one exception, perhaps. Council might take into account at some stage in Hadspin that we name a street, maybe one of the subdivisions as in Hadspin Hills, Port Street after Richie Port. This particular street doesn't lend itself to that because it's such a small one. I think it would be disrespectful to Richie Port. But seeing he'd come from Hadspin, we might consider that in the future. Thank you.
Happy to support that, Councillor. we could make it the port. No, Border come on. Councillor Cameron, it's an idea going forward. Councillor. Okay, councillors, any other discussion? Comments? Councillor Sinfield.
Just very briefly, in my view, the nomenclature board want a long hard look at themselves that you can no longer, or haven't been able to for a long time, name a street. If it's already so named somewhere else in the state, I just think that's absurd. Why can't you have Charles Street, Westbury, and Charles Street in Norfolk or wherever? I mean, it's the entire address that identifies it. This, because you're eventually getting forced into, you know, weird spellings of names and lanes and circuits and whatever's to try and overcome what to me is a very simple thing, I think. Perhaps we ought to consider writing to them and lift your game. There are historically, but not anymore. You can't have them spelt the same or you know say the same thing. Which
yep. Okay. There's no more discussion. Thanks, Councillor Sinfield. Any more discussion, councillors? If not, I'll put it to the vote. All those in favour. Yeah, unanimous again. Thank you. Governance 1. The author. Look, the author's here. Somebody like to move? You're moving, Councillor Sinfield?
I can move it, but I'd also like to flag that the first note needs to be, I think, March 2021, not March 2020.
Well spotted, Councillor Sinfield. And you are moving?
Yes.
Thank you.
I can do that.
A seconder. Councillor Knott. Thank you. Discussions, councillors. Is the mover, Councillor Sinfield? No. Councillor Knott, as a seconder. No. Other councillors, any discussions? Any comments? If not, I'll put the vote. All those in favour? Against, that is unanimous, thank you. Governance 2. Somebody like to move? Councillor Kelly, seconder. Seconder. Councillor Cameron, thank you. Councillor Kelly, as a mover. Councillor Cameron? Oh, yes, no. Oh, okay. Discussions, councillors. Any comments, any discussions? If not, I'll put the motion. Councillor, all those in favour? Councillor Temple? In favour, thank you. Against? Carried, unanimous. Yeah, I guessed that, Councillor. Okay, somebody like to move, somebody like to second that we close the meeting. The moving to close. Councillor Kelly, Councillor Cameron, all those in favour? Against? Carried. Right.